Blog Talk Radio.
From their studio in the Feeding Arizona building in Youngtown, Arizona, it's the Boomer and the Babe Show with Pete Peters and Deborah Brown. Join Pete and Deborah and their guests as they give voice to 78 million baby boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Now here are the Boomer and the Babe, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
Yes, indeed, it is the Boomer and the Babe Show. It should be probably the Boomer Show because the Babe is, again, busy taking care of some of the other aspects of the many things that the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated is involved in. It is Monday, October 10th, 2011, and we are broadcasting live from the studio in Youngtown, Arizona, as the announcer voice said. We'll be getting to our guests in just a minute, but before we do, I want to remind everybody and all of our listeners that the Boomer and the Babe Incorporated is involved in much, much more besides just doing this radio show. We have a series of ebook authors that have their own shows on the Boomer and the Babe Network. That also airs here on Blog Talk. And we invite you to listen to those as well. We produce videos, promotional products, and consult for small businesses. We're truly a multifaceted, multimedia marketing company. And we're still waiting for our guest to call in. Our guest today is scheduled to be Mr. Tom Murray. He is the founder of Villa La Paz. And if anybody out there is listening, that reads the business journal, I opened it up on Friday, and there, lo and behold, is a story in the page 27 of the Business Journal, the Biz 2.0 section, about Tom, a little bit about him and what he does, and asking several of the questions that they always do in that little 2 minutes with. It's what is one of your business goals for the next year? What is a significant goal that you've achieved in the past 12 months and so on? All kinds of very little, small, short questions, short answers, but gives you a little insight into Tom and his business and what he does and so on and so forth. So we're still waiting for him to call in, but what we can do, I guess, is we can talk a little bit about some of the upcoming shows that we have in the interim while we're waiting for him to show up. Of course, on Tuesday, that's tomorrow, the 11th, we're going to have a guest on that is Donna Marie Thompson. And Donna Thompson is involved in something that she calls Bouncing Back. Bouncing Back Now, it's about a story that she has with regard to her bounce back from a loss of a mother, her man, her money, and her health. And within months of each other, and the turmoil that caused, and she's written a book with regard to that, and that should be an interesting subject. I can see now that our guest is on the line, so I'm going to go right to him. Hello, Tom. How are you? Welcome to the Boomer and the Babe Show. We're on live, and I'm glad you could make it. Well, we seem to have lost him again. Well, I don't know what happened, but we lost him again. So we're just going to keep going with what we were doing, I think, talking about some of our guests. And we'll try to get back to Tom here. I don't know why he disappeared as quickly as he showed up there. I think we've got him back now. Hello, Tom, are you there?
I'm here. I'm sorry, Pete.
That's okay. We're on live. I'm glad you could make it. I managed to get hold of you, and that's good. I'm glad we could get to you. I was just starting to tell our listeners that you. I opened up the Business Journal on Friday, and lo and behold, there's a picture of this gentleman that I have never seen before, but I've talked to him several times. And a story about some of your business exploits and some of your thoughts with regard to those. And I thought that was very apropos that all of a sudden, Friday, there you are, and Monday, here you are.
Well, fantastic. Yeah, it seemed to be very appropriate. We've had a lot of press here in the last 2 or 3 weeks for a number of different issues. But yeah, it was there.
Well, that's very good. I mean, anybody that can get the press is, and especially when you're starting a new, relatively new, I should say, venture, and you're looking to have your name out there, it's always nice to get that press. How did who connected you with the Business Journal? How'd that happen?
Well, what we did is, in fact, it was probably about 3 months ago, and everything else. It was pretty obvious to me that, you know, we had tried a lot of different advertising venues and stuff like that, but I sort of. In fact, what it really was, Pete, was that we were very instrumental in the Wallow Fire, you know, as part of the collecting in, donations and stuff for the animals up in Heber and that area during the fire. And one of the main rescue group, had a PR person, you know, a public relations person, sort of run that program. And it was amazing what this person could do as far as garnering, you know, the media support and everything else. So that taught me a lesson, I guess, you know. And so I went out and I found a PR person and brought her on board about 3 months ago, and it's just been amazing, you know, what she could do.
Why don't you give her a plug?
Well, her name is Beth Cochran, and she's with Wired PR, and.
Okay.
She's a young lady. She's very, very, very smart, but she's very well connected in the community here, in the media community, with TV, radio, and print, you know, and pretty amazing what she can come up with and what she can do.
Very good. Well, it's amazing because I use PR agencies myself to find guests from time to time. And there's a lady that I use out of Atlanta, Georgia, of all places, and she brings me quite a few good guests from the Southeast. Some of them have been just excellent guests that she's sent my way, some investment-type people, some entrepreneurial-type people, and so on, and all related somehow, some way to boomerdom and so on and so forth. So it's nice to make those connections, and I'm glad you gave the name because I want to call her myself and see and get to know her a little bit for the local
issue. Well, I'll tell you what, Pete, if you go to our website, if you go on and you hit the, of course, the About button that we all have, you'll see one of the labels is called the team, our team.
Uh-huh.
She is on that thing. I've got her on that team, her picture and her contact information and everything else, because she becomes a very, very important part of, you know, who we are and what we bring to the valley here.
Well, that's great. That's great. I'll make sure that I look that up. Well, let's talk about what it is that you've done and are doing. I've got your bio piece that you sent me. I want to kind of go over that a little bit, but you haven't always been a dog aficionado, or a pet aficionado, shall we say. But you had quite a successful career in technology and programming, and tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
Well, I was very, very fortunate. You know, I did get into the computer industry early, you know, back in the, I'm going to date myself here now, back in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically my father forced me into going into it. Since I quit college, the typical college, he said, you're not going to come home and you're not going to go do more farming. You're going to go back to school. So he found this. He says, I think this is a good thing. Well, and it was. So I got into the computer industry and did that, you know, computer operator, computer programmer, those kinds of things and stuff. And then I moved to Phoenix, Arizona here as a computer consultant with my first job. And then I started my own company in 1980 and had some fantastic customers that basically helped me. And we grew to a point where we had offices in Dallas and San Francisco. And, of course, Phoenix here was our home office. Had about 200 employees, and I sold that company in 1985, and stayed with that organization for about 8 or 9 years, and then the internet boom hit, so I left that company and started an internet company, And that went well for about 3 years, and I sold that company. And then I, a good friend of mine had started a consulting company up in Seattle, Washington, and so he had to probably come up and assist him, more to prepare it for sale. And so I did, and I ended up becoming the president of that company, and we did sell it. They had, we had 16 branch offices throughout the United States, Western United States, about 1,000 people. And so, of course, I stayed with the company that we sold it to.
Mm-hmm.
And stayed with them until 2005. I was their senior vice president of acquisitions and mergers and marketing. And great company, good people. But I, all of a sudden, I took a look back and I said, you know, I have not been home in 30 years.
Oh, wow.
I've been around the world, traveled all the time and stuff. I had convinced myself I was always home for the important things for my kids and stuff, but, you know, for important events, but not when they were growing up. But so anyway, I decided to retire in 2005,
mm-hmm.
and I did, in June of 2005, and I had not planned for my retirement, you know, except to golf.
Right.
And that was a terrible mistake on my part because my golf game didn't get any better, you know. And so by the end of 2005, I was looking for something to do, you know, and had kind of stumbled across the pet industry because I had a pet, had a dog that had passed away. And this is, you know, a goofy story, but I didn't know really what to do with him. Because he passed away in the home and stuff. And that kind of got me launching into looking for what I should have done, what I could have done. Because whatever I did, I did it wrong. You know, and I stumbled across the pet industry. And I'm looking at the industry itself. And it's pretty much, you know, in its infancy. You know, you heard said the pet smart, the pet goes. And, but from a service perspective, it was pretty mom and pop only. And so I took a look at that and said, what if I get into this business with the idea of expanding it nationwide, either, you know, by ourselves or in a franchise model? And I did my business plan, and I got started in November 2005. We started it. And we now have three locations. We've got two Villa Falls Resort and Spas, and one at Bell Road and I-17, and the other one at 32nd Street and Shea. And we just opened up a 12,000 square foot canine training academy, and down at 32nd Street and Shea. And so our franchising, we actually started it. We had four ways to go, and I had it, which took a long, long time to get it prepared, and we had it all ready to go in 2009, and I did not roll it out just because of the economy. But it is, it's now being, I got a new marketing company, and it will be rolled out starting probably November, December of this year.
So now
and
you're...
That's where I'm at.
So you're in... Let's talk a little bit about... It was an accident. You're saying, actually, I guess you're saying is it was an accidental thing that you got involved in the pet industry. Is that accurate?
It was, Pete. You know, and I took a look at some of the financials and stuff that the big companies were doing, and I was pretty amazed at the profit margins and the profitability. And
right.
Even during some tough times, and I thought, whoa, you know. So I got into it strictly from a business perspective, you know, that I thought this would be a good business to be into, a good profitable business. What I found didn't take very long until I fell in love with the business. Mm-hmm. I fell in love with the people I do work with, my customers.
Right.
Because I can't, you know, I mean, if you know people that have pets and everything else, they're truly compassionate people and they're passionate people.
Right.
And
right.
I get to see the best side of them every day. And, you know, and they can be really... I put buttheads out there in the general public, but when I see them walk into our front door, I see the best side of them.
Right.
All the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they're coming in, for the most part, they're coming in with their their animals' best care in mind and in their heart. So, I mean, you're absolutely right. They are pretty much compassionate people. When you put your package together for franchising and so on and so forth, what all were you looking at and how were you looking at it? I read that you were somewhat dismayed by everything that you did that you said you were doing wrong. what I saw that. I think it was in the Business Journal article. What was it that you did wrong? In case there's anybody out there that's thinking of franchising, what do you recommend that they do?
Well, I got into it with this ego, thinking that, you know, franchising, I thought I understood it from a standpoint of, you know, how it's structured and how it's put together, and I didn't know anything. I mean, so I went into it kind of blindly. And it's a ton of work. It's a ton of work, you know, to go ahead and get yourself prepared for a franchising model. And now, luckily enough, I reached out and got some people to help me, probably later in the program, you know, in the cycle than I should have. But I spent a lot of money, okay, and a lot of mental time, you know, that I think I wasted by not going ahead and doing I usually do my due diligence on everything. For whatever reason, I didn't do it on the franchising. I didn't give it enough credit.
Wow.
You know? So I'm back on track now. I've got the right people working with me and stuff. And, you know, I need to have people sometimes guide me, you know. Sometimes it's kind of tough to guide me.
Well, it's tough to do something that it's strictly completely foreign to you, and you know, in a situation like that, you know, there are certain things you can do, make mistakes, and say, oh, well, that was the wrong way to do it, and I can correct that. But when you're doing something like franchising, I would imagine, you know, you do the wrong thing there, and you can be totally screwing yourself royal.
Oh, you're so right, you know, and. I mean, I'm very fortunate to have a partner, you know, and, you know, I call her my yabut lady because I am terrible at detail. And with franchising, you've got to be extremely detailed. You know, I'm always the 10,000-foot guy. Mm-hmm. She's always the one I'll bring back the idea, the concept, or the program, or the plan that we're going to go ahead and implement, you know, and she'll say, yeah, but how are we going to do this? How are we going to do that? You know, and I needed to have that. I didn't use her the first time this way. You know, I just went on my merry way and stuff like that, thinking that. So I need to surround myself with the right people to go ahead and ask the right questions.
Well, you need, it's an old adage, but you need to know what you don't know.
You're right. You're so right. You're so right. And that's that. That's where that human intervention comes in. You know, personal, when you look in the mirror in the morning and say, you know, you're not as smart as you think you are. You know, you better, you know, and that's a hard thing to do once in a while.
Well, I know. I'm probably, you and I are approximately the same age and of the same upbringing because we're both boomers. And
yes.
I must admit that I've always known best my entire life.
Isn't that except, true? It really is.
Except when it comes to Deborah, and she makes sure that I know that I'm not always right.
I have the same situation with my wife at home as well. You know, every time I think, you know, I think it started with my mother because she, and I think my wife picked up on it. You know, she'd always, anytime I walked in anything else with this ego, with this attitude and stuff, she'd always grab me by the shirt collar and go, "Who do you think you are, Mister?"
Yeah.
You know, then, well, back to reality.
Yeah, jerk a knot in that chain.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the actual physicalness of what you do.
Okay.
I'm intrigued by your cage-free concept. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I knew going into something like this, I wanted to have something that was extremely, it would differentiate us, you know, from anything else like it. And over in Europe, they had perfected the cage-free environment in pet care centers and stuff probably 15 years ago, but it really hadn't hit over here in the United States. And so I did a lot. That I did my due diligence on. And found out exactly what we needed to have and, you know, how we needed to do it, you know. And so we implemented that. Cage-free, really what it means is that the dogs that come and stay with us and stuff, or they come for daycare or grooming or boarding, they have to, first of all, have to be spayed and neutered. And then they have to pass a sociability test, a temperament test, to be able to come to our resort. So there is some requirements, you know, that have to do this. But what I also, the big thing was, is that if you take your animal to the traditional kinds of kennels and those kinds of things, you know, there's a lot of separation anxiety, not just from the parents and the dogs, but from the dogs themselves, you know. And once you put them into a, you know, closed structure, you know, you can really see the anxiety hit them. Mm-hmm. And in our environment, it doesn't happen. We call it slumber parties. When they board with us, it's slumber parties. Hmm. And they'll have 5 to 10 or 15 dogs in a room that we put the beds down. That's where they played all day long. And then we'll go ahead and put the beds and the cots down in the evenings and those things. And they're basically a pack animal anyway.
Right.
And they enjoy it. They enjoy each other's company. You know, they rest well. I always tell people, come by our place, one of our resorts, and park outside at 10 o'clock at night, you know, and listen. Turn the radio off, turn the car off, and listen. You won't hear a peep. You know, go to another one of our competitors, you know, that has a close kennel environment, and park outside. And you're going to hear crying and howling and all kinds of, you know, separation anxiety sounds. So that's a big difference for us. We also, with my technology background, we put webcams, and all of our facilities are on 24 hours a day.
Wow.
So the parents, I call them guilt cams. So when the parents go away and stuff, or even if they're here for daycare, they can watch them, you know, from the office. They can see what your dogs do. They can see what the counselors do with the dogs. It's very important to me to be, you know, that we have full exposure, you know, to our customers. And then the other, probably the most important thing is I've got somebody on site 24 hours a day. We don't lock those doors. I mean, we like to lock the front door after 8 o'clock at night, but there's always somebody there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Well, I tell you, you opened up in 05, you said?
Pardon me?
You opened in 05?
Yeah, we opened our first physical resort up in 2006, in April of 2006, and that's the one on I-17 and Bell. And then we opened the second one at 32nd Street in Shea. Well, we purchased that from Eileen Proctor, you know, in 2006, in May of 2006. So, and then we just opened up the training center in June of this year, 2011.
So you bought the Top Dogs facility.
I bought the Top Dogs facility, and she still works with me. You know, I thought it very important to keep her with us, and that was probably one of the best decisions I've made. You know, as Eileen is so well known in the Valley, but also she's a true professional when it comes to marketing.
Right.
And so I rely on her. She works with us in the marketing department.
Well, as you know, she's got a radio program of her own here on the Boomer the Babe Network that she's on twice a month with us. So that's where I first heard or knew of you was listening to the program that you were on with Eileen.
Right.
It's interesting that you have this cage-free environment and so on and so forth. There was an occasion where we took our pet to our dog to one of the large, well-known retail outlets to be boarded. And we've told this story before. We told it to Eileen when she was on our show. And we bought the extra playtime. We bought the special room with the bed and the TV. And and we were gone for, I'm thinking we were gone for 3 days, something like that. And we came back and got to get our dog, and we were absolutely aghast at what the condition of our dog. First of all, she had no bark left. She had no voice. She was obviously had been miserable the whole time she was there, even with a bed to sleep on and the whole deal, you know. The extra playtime turned out it was apparently a walk on the hot asphalt in the middle of July of extra walking.
Right.
And the extra walking left the bottom of her feet, her pads, almost blistered. And we brought her home, and my father, who at the time has since passed, but at the time was suffering from Alzheimer's, and he just babied that dog and loved on that dog because he was so concerned about the condition that she had left in and,
mm-hmm.
the condition she returned in. And mm-hmm. the interesting thing of it was that he himself personally was not communicating well at that time with anybody. But nonetheless, he still saw in his own way that mm-hmm. dog had obviously been mistreated. So I won't get into naming the organization. But
no.
Suffice it to say, it's a big one. And in private, anybody says they're going to board a dog, I will say, don't take your dog to XYZ because it's just not good. It's just not good.
And we hear those stories all the time, you know.
I bet you do. I bet you do.
And, you know, not just the – well, and believe me, there are some good competitors out there that really do care. You know, there's some good ones, you know. But I think the reality, too, is that, you know, I call it the cafeteria-style pricing, you know. And I've seen them work where you'll take your dog in and that's what happens to us. They'll lowball the price, you know, for just the boarding. And then they'll come in and they'll say, well, you want playtime?
Right.
No, that's an extra $5 or $10. You know, do you want a treat for the evening? That's an extra $5 or $10. You want to have cool time? You want that? So before you know it, by the time you come back to pick up your dog, your boarding of your dog costs more than your trip. You know.
Exactly.
Those are the surprises. And I call that the guilt money. Because you're going to make sure that you make sure that your dog's going to be just like everybody else. You know, it's going to have all those amenities. So ours is all inclusive. I mean, you get everything. But again, getting back to the webcams, if you were traveling and stuff like that, you'd want to go in and take a look at your pet, no matter where you're at today, with the internet, and see that they're doing okay, and that they're being cared for.
Well, you know, that Tom, in and of itself, is enough to convince me that my pet is going to be getting great care there. I mean, it takes away that guilt of having to leave the pet in the first place.
Right. I mean, there's two forms of separation anxiety, and I always tell our people this, you know, our staff and stuff. I said, you know, our job is to go ahead and make sure that the separation anxiety for the animal, for the pet, is controlled. You know, we have to take care, make sure that they're busy, make sure that they're playing, make sure that they're happy with what they're doing. I said, the separation anxiety of the parents, that's my job.
Right.
My job is to go ahead, you know, and give them that comfort factor, you know, that they can call, check in. I mean, if you take a look, if you call our resorts today, it's an automated attendant. But option 4 is my phone number, 24 hours a day.
Oh, very good.
You know?
Very good.
And I tell everybody that. If you've got a concern, if you've got anything else, you call me directly. And then that rings on my cell phone, and I'm there to answer it and find out if there's an issue.
Very good. Very good. Well, one of the reasons that I was interested in having you on the show is also not only the fact that I think you're doing really neat stuff, and I wanted to get a little bit more information and have our listeners have a little bit information about it. If they happen to miss Eileen Proctor's show, Fervently Speaking, or if they just happen to catch it or see the Business Journal, and maybe this will all tie together for them. But I wanted to get your opinions on a few things because you are a typical boomer in that you have retired, You've reinvented yourself. You've had some things go along the way that may have caused you some consternation with regard to retirement, and that was possibly why you decided to take on something different. Any number of reasons. But let's talk a little bit about that. When you retired, was it just like, I'm going to retire, boom, I'm done working, I'm just going to have a great time, or were you at all concerned about the fact that you were retiring?
You know, and then I had to go out and look for insurance, health insurance. That was, you know, and again, that's something I hadn't planned for, and that was a slap across the face, big time, you know. So all of a sudden, my financial security, I could still make it, but it was going to start to squeeze me a little bit, you know, especially not knowing what was going to happen, you know, in the future. So that was part of it, you know. I think the other part was, this is, I have a lot of friends here in the Valley and stuff over the years, of course, doing business and stuff. And I met with them, you know, four or five guys that would, and these guys were tops in their business, just tops in their business. And I would meet with them for coffee once a week. And I felt they'd lost their edge, you know, mm-hmm. in a lot of different ways, you know, and it scared me. It scared me that, you know, I've always been extremely competitive, I hope, extremely creative and stuff like that. And so were these guys at one time. But they had lost it. And I even brought it up to them. And they basically, to a person, said, you know, since they'd retired and everything else, they had really no challenging things left in their life. I mean, real challenging things. And that, if anything else, what forced me out of retirement was that. And I still felt I had too much to offer.
It wasn't the fact that you got tired of playing golf.
I got worse playing golf, Pete. I took lessons, okay? And that's humiliating. And probably the other most humiliating thing was is that my wife thought she had her first employee, you know, because she started all these honey-do lists and stuff. And I spent all my time at Home Depot. You go over there and stuff, and when I'm not a very handy guy. So you go over there, and you've got somebody over there basically, you know, berating you to a point where it says, you know, you don't know how to fix the toilet? You don't know how to go in? You know, you know, and it's like, God, I feel bad enough without you guys going ahead and berating me, all right?
Are you a complete freaking idiot?
Exactly, you know. I only want to buy one bolt. I don't want to buy six because I'll lose the other five. I know I will. Can I just buy one? No.
Can't be done. Speaking of that, it's amazing you mentioned that. Because back in the day, and I'm talking about the 60s, okay?
Right.
When I was going to school, and out of high school, I was going to college, and I worked at a hardware store back in the Detroit, Michigan area. And it was a series of, I think, five or six independently owned hardware stores, famous in that area, had been there forever. And they had bolts and nuts in little drawers and different sizes and washers and whatever. And you could buy one nut and bolt and a washer to go with it. And then all of a sudden the change came, and everything was in a blister pack, and they hung it on the pegboard. And I tell you, that nothing was more discouraging than having to buy a blister pack of whatever's quarter inch or whatever.
Right.
And it just drives you nuts.
And for the organized people, it's fine because they will go here and put that away someplace they know where it's at. For the unorganized like myself, I might as well just take those other five and throw them away because I'll never find them again.
It's true. Well, you know, it's amazing. Right here out where we live in this part of the valley in Sun City, there's an Ace Hardware store, and there's also down the road a True Value Hardware store. And they both have those buy the one you need.
Yes,
stuff.
They do.
And
it's absolutely
wonderful. But it's no Home Depot, that's for sure.
That's right. You're on your own.
Exactly, exactly. You mentioned also in some of the notes that you sent along, we were talking about, you know, what were you going to talk about and so on and so forth, and you sent me this nice bio. But then you also said that there are some things that maybe we could just talk about from a, I guess maybe from a boomer point of view. And one of the things you said that really chaps your hide is boomer slash victim syndrome. What are you talking about?
Well, I tell you what, being a product of the 60s and everything else and stuff, and as we've gone, I mean, I see a lot of people my age and stuff like that have now turned into this victim role. You know, it's the poor me syndrome. Yeah, it's tough out there. You know, it's tough on the boomers and everything else. But I all because of all the people that I do know that are my age and everything else and what they have to offer, you know, what I don't want to see them do is turn into a victim and become a victim. My employees and stuff, I've got probably 10 that are over the age of 55. Mm-hmm. And they're the best, most dependable workers that I've got. You know, and so there's a role for us to play. And I think there's a role for us to play as role models. You know, God knows that this country surely needs role models now.
Right.
You know, and I think it's our generation's, you know, this may be a bit controversial. I do believe that our generation, the 60 generation, was probably the generation that started this down a path, you know, of where we're at today. You know, we were very vocal. We wanted to change the world. We wanted to change the United States. We were all into free love and drugs. Not
sex,
all of
drugs,
us,
and,
but
sex, drugs, and rock and roll, baby.
Exactly. That was it, you know. And we did make a difference. We did change. Well, now all of those people are running the country. A lot of them are.
Yes, they are.
But so we have... I think we changed the way that that children were brought up and stuff, of course. And, of course, you know, there's lots of reasons for that. But I think that we need to take the role of the role model back to this younger generation. Work ethic, you know, thought processes. You know what? I challenge my kids. I said, you guys don't dream. You guys don't, you know, I said, I would sit there and I would basically daydream on what I was going to do. You guys, there's so much information coming at you with the internet, with all the networking and stuff that goes on. I think you never take time to sit back and dream. You know, in our generation, we knew how to dream.
Well,
don't know how.
We would say, "What if I did this? I can do that." You know, and the sense of invention, I think, is being, if not totally lost, certainly diminished. And everything is, it's on the internet. I'll go look it up. I've got it on my smartphone, whatever the case might be. And it's when you stop and think, and these lists are rampant. The things that we as baby boomers, and I'm a leading edge baby boomer myself. I don't know where you fit in there, but
63. So.
I'm a year older, basically.
Okay.
So the things that we did, saw, witnessed, experienced will never be witnessed or experienced again. The fact that we did things, we've seen things prior to technology, we've seen the birthing of all this technology, and we're now working with whatever the technology is that's moving on beyond where it has been, and it moves at the speed of light, for crying out loud, and we're trying to keep up with this stuff.
Right.
There is, to my knowledge, there is no other generation that has experienced that. My granddaughters, who are 5 and 2.5, will never know what a dial telephone is. They will only know a smartphone. That's all they'll know.
Yeah.
They'll play games. The 2.5-year-old already plays games on her mother's smartphone.
Right.
My daughter.
But what they haven't learned is the value system. A value system. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what our generation can impart upon these people.
Yes.
The value system. We can have all the toys and we can have all the technology in the world and everything else, but we've got to go ahead. I think that, again, back to the role model part, we can help have them build a strong base, a
yes.
value system base. You know, and that's going to be extremely challenging. I don't know how to do it, Pete. I don't have a clue.
Right.
You know.
Well, here's what I, this is my two-bit psychology on this. I trusted what my parents taught me. And
yep.
I have tried to impart what they taught me to my daughter and her son, her husband, my son-in-law, are of
mm-hmm.
basically the same mind. And they're
mm-hmm.
trying to impart that to their children.
Right.
And I that's the best I can do. I can't change the world, but I can
no.
have that effect on them, and through me, through them, they're getting my parents' values to some degree modified to the current day, but nonetheless the values are the same. We can teach the do unto others as you'd have them
right.
do unto you. We and I'm not trying to get religious here, but I mean. There are 10 basic tenets, and if you do those, you're okay.
You're right.
You
know? If you follow those 10 that we can't talk about, and we can't
right.
publicize, and we can't have in any public buildings, you know, and
right.
stuff. You talk
right.
about those 10 and everything else, you're going to have a pretty good life.
Yes, you will. You absolutely will. Just honest, be honest and work hard, you'll have a good life, you know.
Yes, you will.
It's amazing.
And
it's
what
amazing.
You said, if we can do that, if we could get convinced, you know, all the art people in the world, stuff like that, to
mm-hmm.
take the time to go ahead and spend time with the grandkids.
Right.
You know, I mean, and it's not the fun time. You know, I mean, education time.
Right.
Spend it with
right,
your
right.
grandkids. You
yes,
know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I can tell you, I mean, I'm sure you too, growing up, my grandparents were probably extremely important, you know, in developing Tom Murray.
Right.
You know, with my
right.
parents, definitely. But my grandparents had strong influences on that as well.
Absolutely. It was that way with me. I remember my grandmother, who was a widow, and my
mm-hmm.
On my mother's side, and my grandparents both on my father's side. I remember watching my grandmother in 1955 get in the car and being taken to the hospital and crying her eyes out because she knew she was going to the hospital to die from her breast cancer. But that's
yep.
what it was, you know.
Yep.
And those are very profound moments. And
yep.
And my family shared those moments just by the fact that they allowed me to be there to witness it.
Right. Okay. They didn't shelter you because it's
no.
part of our experience, you know.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And I can honestly say that that my daughter and son-in-law are, for the most part, doing – I can't – they have a lot more advantages because he's got a phenomenal job, and she gets to be a stay-at-home mom in this particular economy, which is just unheard of almost.
It is.
But nonetheless, she is spending time with those babies, and she is with them, and she is working with them, and teaching them, and helping at the school. And when Don has time off, he is at the school. He's doing all the things that my father did with me,
right.
taking them for. To go to classes and exercise classes. I mean, that's the thing. They don't get to go out and play like we did.
No,
because there's too many freaking weirdos out there. But
yep.
nonetheless, they're getting their
social. But you know, I tell you what, Pete. We had weirdos too. We just didn't know it.
Well,
true. We had a lot of weirdos back in the '60s as well. Okay.
Yes,
and
we did.
I don't know whether they hid or how they hid or anything else, but they were there.
Yes,
they were there.
They were there.
Yeah.
I agree, and I don't know if it's now. It's probably just the media now. That's why we hear so much more about them. But
I think that's probably true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're basically we're, you know, I think that's what we're scared, but we're scared into isolation a lot of times.
I think you're right.
Know?
I think you're right. We had a gentleman on the show. This is interesting, and it'll kind of go into a lot of the things that you and I are kind of hinting around and talking about right now are directly related to two guests that I've had on this show last week. And one of them is a gentleman by the name of William Neggendorf. And William Neggendorf has a website called Boomers UBA, United Boomers of America. And he says all about boomers' best work and boomers looking for jobs and how boomers need to be more cognizant of the fact that they're boomers, not to let themselves become victims, and be more emphatic and more more out there with regard to what they're doing. And he's written this website, put this website together. It's just unbelievable. We had an unbelievable conversation with him. And and some of the things we talked about is stop telling people not to hire you. The number one reason boomer applicants disappoint hiring managers. It's just amazing. Hiring manager landmines. What boomers always step on, and it's just he has made a study of this. He has interviewed 310, I think, hiring managers, and they all had the same basic thoughts. And that is that the boomers need to be more aggressive with the fact that they're boomers and not let themselves become victims. And I have a sense that's what you're talking about.
It is, because I think that, I think that when hiring managers, and believe me, in my past and stuff, I hired thousands of people in the computer industry, and they need to lead with their assets, and because when you're talking about HR people and stuff and hiring people, most of these people are in their 20s and 30s.
Right.
You don't want to come across as being a liability, a potential liability, So you got to lead with your assets, lead with your maturity, lead with your work ethic, lead with your value system.
That's
what's important, Otherwise, if you don't, they're going to view you right off the bat coming in as a liability.
That's one of the things we discussed, and it was when, in the course of your conversation with these people, you have to be able to say to them, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is why you should hire me, and this is what I will return on your investment.
You bet.
I know that I can do this for you, I can do this project for you, and I can return your investment in me, and it will take X number of, whatever you think it might be, conceivably, that you will have your investment in me will be returned to you, and you'll be in the profit side.
Right. I totally agree. I mean, I am, get positive about who you are, what you are, and what you're all about, and then have a way to go ahead and inform the person you're talking to about it. Not bragging, but it's just fact.
Well, I've written a book. I've put a book together. We haven't published it yet, but it's I've got to get my editor Deborah to to do the.
Come on, Deborah, step up here.
Yeah, she's going to listen to this show.
Yeah, she's gonna, and she's holding you back, Pete. She's holding you back.
I know. She said so
I'll get
much.
I'm gonna get you in real trouble here before the.
Thank you, my friend. She does so much work for this business; it's unbelievable. But anyhow, and the title of the book is "Experience Speaks," and it's not a lot of do it this way, do it that way. It's Many observations. They're articles. I'm calling them articles. They have been at some point. They've been a blog, but I've changed them around a little bit. But they're observations about what's going on and what's happening and so on and so forth. And I figured, what the heck? I know what I'm talking about. I've been doing this.
Yes.
I've been doing this for 50 freaking years. I've been doing something.
And you've learned all the things not to do. You experienced all the things that basically got you into trouble or didn't work,
Right.
So, and that's valuable, valuable stuff. I've always figured, you know, the, for my success is based upon my failures.
That's right.
You know?
Right.
I know not to do certain things.
If you're not failing, you're not trying.
You're right.
You're
right.
You're not putting yourself out there. Another thing that I found very, very interesting, and I had mentioned that a couple of the points that you indicated were directly related to a couple of guests we had. There's another gentleman that we had on the show. His name is Dick, where is it? How do I pronounce this? I don't remember. Ambrosino or something like that, I believe it is, Ambrosio.
Uh-huh.
And he's got a program called NeoCorta, Positive Aging Services. He's a VP of Outreach and Group Programs for NeoCorta. NeoCorta is a brain game facility.
Really?
Or assessment, a brain assessment facility. And he does it all. He does it all online. He's been the Entrepreneur of the Year for Entrepreneur Magazine and so on and so forth. And he was on President Reagan's appointed National Advisory Committee in 81. The guy's very well accomplished. And his points that we talked were about what is brain fitness, how does his organization differ from being brain games, and so on. But it was really an interesting thing about exercising your brain and how you exercise your brain and what you do to try to keep yourself sharp and to challenge yourself mentally. It was a very, very interesting conversation. So I find it very interesting also then that when we're discussing some of the things that we might talk about on our time together, that there's two things that were right there. So, I mean, these people, yourself included, have nailed it, I think, as far as what some of the concerns are for our generation.
I think so, you know, and I think you've got two paths to go ahead and go to. You can fall into the victim role, or you can go ahead and say, I'm not going to let this happen to me. You know, I'll do whatever I need to do to go ahead and be a productive member of society or the family or whatever it may be, you know. And I had the luxury of having my mother-in-law stay with me for the last 6 years of her life. She moved into our house from Iowa. And I learned more from her over that 6 years, you know, just having her in our house. And we did not get along at all, okay, prior to that too much. You know, we kind of tolerated each other. And I learned to love that woman more than ever because she taught me so much because I would sit and talk to her. But I'd talk to her about what she was feeling. Okay, and stuff. And, you know, part of it was definitely she felt that she was an imposition, you know, on us, which she surely wasn't. But, it again, those are lessons learned from my perspective, you know, on do I – first of all, I'm not too sure my kid would take care of me. No, that's not true. They would, you know. But I'm not too sure I want to go ahead and have to have them take care of me. So that's part of my driving force, too.
Right.
You know, and I want to be able to control my own destiny until the day I die.
Right. Right.
I don't want to turn that over to somebody else. You know.
Yeah.
That's
I like the thought of being able to handle my own stuff too. It's
Yes.
The last thing I wanted to talk to you about briefly is we're getting down to the end of our time together. You say you're getting a second chance, a chance to do it your way.
Yes.
Explain what you mean by that.
Well, I did it my way to begin with, you know, when I started my own first couple of companies and stuff. And I can tell you when I sold those companies, when I sold the first one, and I did very well in doing it, you know, I felt guilty. I felt when they actually handed me the check to that company and everything else, I felt guilty because I didn't feel like I was smart enough. And part of the reason I sold it, I didn't think I was smart enough. I didn't think I was educated enough to run a company that was growing that fast. And what I found out very shortly thereafter, you know, was that I was probably just about as smart as those guys. You most part, sure, according to the company knows, you know. But it's the what was the question again, Pete?
Yeah. Well, the fact what I was getting at was you had mentioned something about the fact that you are getting a second chance to do it your way.
Oh yeah.
And
well,
and
you know, I've jumped into the corporate life for the last 20 years. I mean, I was, you know, in and out of it, but, you know, great people, really smart people. Okay, I was very fortunate to be surrounded by such good people, but, you know, and it got, you know, what I learned was basically, well, I never lost, and what was good for them. I mean, they knew I had the entrepreneurial spirit. They figured a way how to go ahead and make money off of me, you know, within a corporate environment. They did extremely well, and by allowing me to do a lot of things. So coming out of that, though, I mean, I knew how to do a business plan. I knew how to do the financials. I knew how to do all those things I didn't know how to do 25 years ago.
Right.
So it gave me a great, you know, baseline to start from, you know, and that I attribute to all the, you know, the people that I surrounded myself with for those 20 years. They taught me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was in mergers and acquisitions, you know, for the last 8 years, you know, and we bought companies in India, Europe, stuff. And one of the things that before I took that position, they were finding out that they would acquire a company. And when you acquire a consulting company, you're basically acquiring people.
Right.
And they were losing a lot of the people after the acquisition. People were leaving. A lot of times the owners would leave. You know, they got their money and they'd run off. Hmm. And we didn't have a conducive environment for the owners to stay with the company. You know, so I changed all that around, you know, different incentives, but mostly, you know, welcoming them. Let them be entrepreneurs. We bought a company, but you bought the entrepreneurial spirit at the same time.
Right.
So how do we, you know, let's don't force our culture, you know, on this new company. Let's somehow, you know, they've got some good stuff, we've got some good stuff, let's blend them together. And
sure,
that seemed to work.
Right.
You know, so it's working with people, you know, and I guess that's always been one of my strong points, is being able to work with people. And I enjoy it.
Yeah, I have another way of saying exactly what I think you're saying, and that is that the time that I have spent in the corporate world or working for other people I've always been there as some sort of a marketing capacity and an advertising sales manager. I work primarily in the newspaper print industry, and I was always, you know, setting the objective, setting the goal, setting the marketing plans, putting them in order, and so on and so forth. And I made a lot of people a lot of money in spite of themselves. In spite of themselves.
I'm sure.
Because the last guy I worked for, I'll never forget it. The last guy I worked for, I worked my can off for him, and I got ill. I mean, I had Valley Fever, and I was quite ill with Valley Fever, and I continued to work for him. I continued to come to work in a three-piece suit. I would sweat through a three-piece suit during the first day because of the Valley Fever. And that son of a gun had the audacity to bring me into his office and say, you know, Pete, he says, I think we're going to have to end our relationship. And I says, well, really, why? He says, well, because the fact that you're making claims on the insurance policy are driving my rates up, and you're making too much money. You're taking home more money than I am.
Yeah,
and I'm
right.
the publisher, and I'm the owner's son, and you're making more money than I am. I said, do you realize what you're saying? He says, well, yes. He says, I cannot have that position being paid that much money. I said, then why did you agree to it in the first place when we drew up a contract? You know,
because he never thought you'd make it. He never thought
right.
you'd ever achieve. You
that's
know?
Exactly, and that's exactly what he says. He says, I never thought anybody would be able to do that. Well, kiss my whatever.
Boy, no kidding. Well, I tell you, I think what you're talking about, even in corporate life, though, and stuff, I mean, there's so many people that are just worried about keeping their job.
Right.
You know, I call them the no-neckers. You know, and my kids, again, we talk about the grandparents influencing you. My grandfather used to always say, Tom, your head, you know, is stuck on your shoulders, but you got a neck. Stick it out.
Yeah.
Stick it out.
Yep.
And I have found out that there's a whole lot of no-neckers in the world.
Yep.
People that just, you know, especially here in Arizona. When I first got here 30 years ago, I'd talk to a potential customer and stuff, and they would, if it's anything that was all risky, they would say no. And I'd call them no-neckers. I'd tell them that. You come out here to Arizona, you're 50 years old, you're going to retire here, you don't want anything to disturb your retirement. So you got to find the people with necks and willing to stick them out.
That's right.
A lot of times.
Very true. Very true. Yeah, and sometimes they're just not easy to be found. And I think as things are changing in the direction that they seem to be going right now, I think in many cases, people's necks are starting to disappear.
I think we got a lot of turtles out there.
I think there's a whole bunch
of turtles.
I agree. They just retreat into their shell and, you know, want to make sure that nobody looks at them. You know, don't make eye contact.
Well, as all these people are retreating out, so hopefully my competitors, everybody else, they're retreating their shells. I'm out there. I'm the hare. I'm going right past them.
There you go.
You know?
That sounds like a plan to me. Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, Tom, it's been a pleasure spending this hour with you. I mean, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I'm glad you could get in and talk with us. I think you're going to have a great continued success on your hands with what you're doing. We didn't even get into your dog training aspect of what you do, but I'm sure that's developing very well.
That is so much fun. I mean, it really is a ton of fun.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and give people the contact information for you and how they can get hold of you if they have any other questions, and go from there. Did they even have that in the Business Journal? I didn't see it in there.
I think it's in there, but, you know, let me give it to you again. Our website, you know, is www, and it's villalapaz.com. That's villalapaws.com. And the phone number here is 888-855-7833. And there's like I said, there's an automated attendant. And I think option 4 gets you right to me if you want to talk, anybody wants to talk to me. Or you can talk to any one of the resorts.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you again for spending an hour with us, taking time out of your busy day today, and I wish you nothing but good luck, and I'm sure maybe our paws will cross somewhere.
You've been talking to Eileen again, haven't you?
It rubs off.
I'm sure our paws will cross, yes.
it definitely rubs off.
It does.
Okay. Thanks again, Tom. I appreciate your company, and it's been a great time having you on the phone.
Well, thank you, Pete. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show here on Blog Talk Radio, and we've been talking, of course, to Mr. Tom Murray, who is the owner, president, CEO of Villa La Paz. Villa, V-I-L-L-A, L-A, La Paz, B-A-W-S. And Tom's got a great thing going, and if you're interested at all in some great care for your pets, your dogs, be sure and give Tom a call. Every day at the Boomer the Babe Show, we try to bring you good conversation. I think we accomplished that today. Listen to the Boomer the Babe Show every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, we do more than host this radio show. Check us out at boomerandthebabe.com. That's boomerandthebabe.com. See everything that makes up the Boomer the Babe Incorporated. Make sure that the second half of your life is the best half of your life. Tune in again tomorrow for another great guest and more conversation. Until then, have a great day, everybody. To the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47.
As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.